This content is AI-generated for informational purposes only and should not be directly used for clinical decision-making.
Hello and welcome back to the Neurosurgery Hub podcast. I'm Dr. Aris, Senior Attending Neurosurgeon.
And I'm Dr. Alara. Today we're looking at a fascinating new study from the first affiliated hospital of Zhangjiao University, recently published in BMC Endocrine Disorders. The paper is titled Development and Validation of a Predictive Model for Hypothalamic Obesity Following Craniopharyngioma Resection.
This is a topic that hits home for anyone who has spent time in the cellar and supercellar regions. We often talk about surgical success in terms of gross total resection or decompressing the optic chiasm. But for the patient, the long-term metabolic consequences, specifically hypothalamic obesity, or HO, can be devastating.
Absolutely. The paper defines HO as a syndrome of hyperphagia and significant weight gain caused by structural or functional impairment of the hypothalamic energy homeostasis regulation system. We've seen the statistics. The incidence of secondary HO after craniopharyngioma surgery can range from 51% to 78% in children, and between 27% and 55.6% in adults.
Those are staggering numbers. It's a reminder that craniopharyngioma, while histologically benign, whether we're talking about the adamantinomatous or papillary subtypes, is malignant by location. It's tucked right against the hypothalamus, pituitary, and optic nerves. Alara, walk us through the study design they used to tackle this.
It was a retrospective analysis of 136 patients diagnosed with craniopharyngioma between September 2018 and February 2024. They split these patients into a training cohort and a validation cohort using a 7-to-3 ratio. The goal was to identify risk factors and then use those factors to build a multivariable predictive model, a nomogram essentially, to identify high-risk patients early on.
Before we get into the predictive model itself, what were the baseline differences between the patients who developed HO and those who didn't?
In the training cohort, there were several significant findings. The HO group had higher preoperative body mass index, higher preoperative serum sodium, and higher preoperative uric acid levels. Interestingly, they also noted higher postoperative calcium levels and a higher probability of intraoperative blood loss reaching or exceeding 100 ml.
Intraoperative blood loss of 100 ml doesn't sound like much in a major cranial case, but in the context of a delicate cellar dissection, it might be a proxy for surgical difficulty or more aggressive adherence to the hypothalamus. Did they look at the tumor characteristics specifically?
They did. Preoperative hypothalamic injury and what they called T-type tumors were significantly more frequent in the HO group. Conversely, small tumors, defined as those less than 5 cubic centimeters, were much less frequent in the HO group.
So smaller tumors are somewhat protective, which makes intuitive sense. But the paper went beyond just identifying these associations. They ran a logistic regression to find the independent risk factors. What came out on top?
They found two independent risk factors and two protective factors. The independent risk factors for postoperative HO were a high preoperative BMI and intraoperative blood loss of 100 ml or more.
And the protective factors?
Older age at onset and smaller tumor size.
Let's dive deeper into that BMI finding. It's a bit of a double whammy for the patient. If they come in with a higher BMI, they are already at a baseline metabolic disadvantage, and the surgery seems to trigger a more severe weight gain response.
Exactly. The study suggests that preoperative high BMI is a strong predictor. When they combine these four factors, BMI, blood loss, age at onset, and tumor size, into their predictive model, the results were quite impressive. In the training cohort, the area under the receiver operator characteristic curve, or AUC, was 0.865.
An AUC of 0.865 is quite robust for a clinical predictive model. How did it hold up in the validation cohort? We often see these models perform well on the original data, but fail when tested against a new set.
It actually held up very well. The validation cohort had an AUC of 0.864. The sensitivity in the validation group was 90.9%, with a specificity of 72.2%. They also used the Hosmer-Lemichaud test and calibration curves, which showed that the predicted values were in close agreement with the observed outcomes.
This is useful because it moves us away from just saying hypothalamic involvement causes obesity to a more nuanced, multifactorial view. For the residents listening, let's talk about the surgical implications of that 100 ml blood loss threshold.
The authors point out that while the association between hypothalamic involvement and HO is well confirmed, the effects of other factors like surgical mode or intraoperative events are still debated. By identifying intraoperative blood loss as a risk factor, it highlights the importance of meticulous hemostasis and perhaps reflects the complexity of the tumor-hypothalamus interface. If you're losing more blood, you're likely struggling with a tumor that is more adherent or involving more vascularized hypothalamic structures.
It's also a warning for us during the operation. If we recognize the case is becoming more bloody or complex, we should already be preparing the patient and the endocrine team for a high risk of postoperative HO. Now, the study mentioned older age as a protective factor. Why do we think that is?
The paper notes that HO is particularly prevalent in children, up to 78% in some pediatric series. Younger brains might be most susceptible to the disruption of energy homeostasis pathways, whereas older patients might have more fixed metabolic patterns, or perhaps the tumors in older adults, like the papillary subtype, behave differently than the adamantinomatous types often seen in kids.
That brings up the different histological subtypes. Did they see a difference in HR rates between ACP and PCP?
The inclusion criteria covered both adamantinomatous and papillary subtypes, but the final model focused more on the clinical and radiological parameters, like tumor size and BMI, rather than histology alone as an independent predictor.
Let's talk about the clinical utility of the nomogram. As a research fellow, Ilara, how do you see a neurosurgery department using this in practice?
The authors suggest it's all about early identification. If we can use this model to flag a patient as high risk before they even leave the hospital, we can initiate early interventions. This might include aggressive nutritional counseling, close monitoring of hyperphagia, and perhaps early involvement of metabolic specialists.
Because once the weight gain starts, it's notoriously difficult to reverse. These patients don't just gain a few pounds, they develop a relentless, unstoppable hunger. The quality of life decrease is significant. Metabolic syndrome, cardiovascular disease, it's a heavy burden.
And the paper emphasizes that a single risk factor is often insufficient for clinical assessment. That's why the multivariable approach is so key. By looking at BMI, age, blood loss, and tumor size together, we get a much clearer picture than just looking at the MRI.
Were there any limitations in the study that our colleagues should be aware of?
It was a retrospective analysis at a single center, the first affiliated hospital of Zhangjiao University. While 136 patients is a decent sample size for craniopharyngioma, which is relatively rare, larger multicenter studies would definitely help to further validate the model across different surgical styles and populations.
Right. Surgical styles can vary, transsphenoidal versus transcranial. And while they mentioned surgical mode can be controversial in its impact on HO, this study provides a solid baseline for risk stratification.
They also mentioned that preoperative hypothalamic injury and T-type tumors were higher in the HO group during the initial analysis, even if they weren't the primary independent factors in the final simplified model. It's a reminder that the anatomy still matters.
So if I'm a resident preparing for a craniopharyngioma case tomorrow, what's my takeaway from this 2026 study?
First, check the patient's preoperative BMI. If it's high, your risk for HO is already elevated. Second, look at the tumor size. If it's over 5 cubic centimeters, that's another risk point. During the surgery, be extremely mindful of blood loss. Hitting that 100 ml mark isn't just about the hematocrit. It's a marker for postoperative metabolic risk. And finally, if you have a young patient with these factors, they are your highest risk group.
It's about shifting our perspective. We aren't just removing a tumor. We are managing a lifelong endocrine and metabolic profile. This model gives us a tool to start that management on day one, rather than waiting for the patient to return to clinic 6 months later, having gained 30 pounds.
Exactly. The goal is early identification for high-risk patients to mitigate the impact on their quality of life.
Well, that's a great place to wrap up. A big thank you to the researchers at Zhangjiao University for this work. It's studies like these that help us refine our postoperative care and patient counseling.
Definitely. Thanks for joining us on the Neurosurgery Hub podcast. We'll see you in the next episode.
Goodbye, everyone.